Welcome to the Hot Lamp Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Ryan, I'm in Washington. Ryan is in San Diego. Padres Nationals, start of a six-game road trip. Ryan, where would you like to start?
I think we have to start with what happened in the last series. Padres get swept at home by the Philadelphia Phillies. Get absolutely dominated by Christopher Sanchez, one of the best pitchers in baseball. Kevin, we've been talking all year. The Padres have faced some of the best pitchers in all of the sport this year. But man, to me, this seems like a series that we could look back on as the time when everybody started to realize what we've known for a while, which is that this offense is struggling.
You know, I think that's a really good point. I think that's why there's a lot of angst among the fans, because it was, we knew this was a possibility. And then, look what happened this homestand. Yes, I mean, they took two or three from the A's, but look what happened against the Dodgers. Oh, okay, it was good pitching. All right, look what happened with the Phillies. Oh, okay, it was good pitching. But we're not finding solace in that. Because this has been forecasted for some time that if the offense, and if namely the big guys on the offense, don't get going and start producing and helping out in a bigger way, that this was going to happen. Now, we don't know that this is happening, but your point is like spot on. We could look back on this as the time when it did start to happen.
Right. And it's strange. And Kevin, you touched on this in today's Union Tribune. I urge everybody who has not read your story about where the Padres sit at the 1/3 way point of the season to go read that right now. We'll wait for you. We'll still be here. To me, what's telling is that, you know, they're getting good performances from unlikely places. Their starting pitching is not nearly as bad as some had feared it would be. Walker Buehler pitched his butt off the other day. They're getting, you know, big hits, clutch hits from guys like Nick Castellanos and Ty France. You know, you had a great line in there that there are some in the organization that are really frustrated because those guys have delivered while the big guys continue to struggle. And by the big guys, we mean Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and increasingly Jackson Merrill. You know, sort of what are people talking about there within the organization as they head to Washington, D.C. to open a 3-game series?
They're looking ahead and saying, well, we think this offense will get better. And part of that is, well, it kind of has to. It would be incredible if it stayed this bad with those guys. And partly because they have to believe that it's going to get better. Otherwise, like, forget it. Like, we're not, you know, right. what are we doing here? So that's what they're talking about. And they're preparing to make the team better before the trade deadline. But like, that's not a guarantee because it's not guaranteed that these guys will turn it around. Now, what the Padres hope is that your last statement about Jackson Merrill is one day too late because he had two hits against Sanchez. And okay, great. That was his first multi-hit effort in, well, I shouldn't say effort. He was trying to get multiple hits. He was efforting, but that was his first multi-hit performance in 2.5 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. So,
wow.
The spirit of your comment is 100% on, and that is that Jackson Merrill has to contribute more. Fernando Tatis Jr., he is getting on base, like at almost a 50% rate here over the last 11 games. Still not, you know, running around the bases on a home run. That has to change. And Manny Machado, who I thought had maybe one of the most interesting comments of the season, on Wednesday, when yet again, three times now this week, Manny's taken it upon himself and the other, you know, big guys, and, you know, especially on himself, and reiterated with different words how it has to get better. They can't sustain winning at the pace that they are, by the way, fourth best record in the National League, without him producing. And he said, you know, some of these other guys that have carried us, like it's starting to wear on us. And what he means is what we've all been saying. You cannot have supplementary guys, and all credit to them, but they're supplementary guys. They can't be the guys carrying this team because basically it's impossible for them to carry the team, or they wouldn't be supplementary guys.
Right. And when we talk about guys playing to the stats on the back of their baseball card, right, that goes both ways. While there's probably some belief in there that Jackson Merrill and Fernando Tatis will will continue to hit or hit more and start hitting more home runs and all of that. There's probably also a belief that a guy like Nick Castellanos is going to be about who he's always been, and that a guy like Gavin Sheets, while he's had a very great couple of years with the Padres, he's not going to be the guy who's the face of your team going forward. The stars need to play like stars because the role players are going to, at some point, probably revert to being role players, right?
There you go. It's well put. The back of the baseball card goes both ways. And let's just say, like, for Nick Castellanos, who he's always been or who he's been the last year or so, right? Because he's getting older. And also then Gavin Sheets, he could be better than the stats on his baseball card. Absolutely. I mean, it looks like he will be. But does that mean 28 home runs? That doesn't seem probable, could it? Sure. I don't know that that alone would be enough, but like, you need at least two of the three big guys to perform like they're supposed to. And again, Tatis's numbers are getting up there, except for the power numbers. And I just can't get over that, like, to this point, and it would be, what, 53 starts for Fernando, his worst ever previous season, he'd have 9 home runs right now. Like, he has 0. That's 9 home runs missing from the ledger. Like, this is the deepest Padres team since 2020, the 60-game season. And pretty soon we won't be able to compare that anymore. But right now we're within 60 games. So we can say that at this point in that season, like, there are like 9 guys with an 800 OPS. Like, that was just – the Padres came out blazing, and they just blazed all year. Like, but it's, there has never been another Padres team like that since then, that has had so many contributors.
Right. And that's, I think that that's the frustrating part, right? Is that if the stars can just start playing like stars, the other pieces are in place where maybe something special can happen here. But that's a big what if. I mean, we're reaching the point in the season, it's no longer a small sample size. Fernando Tatis not hitting home runs is no longer a small sample size. Manny Machado's OPS is no longer a small sample size. You know, that has to be sort of the cause for concern here, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. That said, if you go back, this is Manny's worst year, and it's worse by far. However, there have been a couple other years, including recently, that it wasn't great. And then he picked up in June. So there's that. Fernando Tatis Jr., and I was even surprised when I went back, because I remember that in 2024, when he went on the injured list, he had an OPS, I think it was 9-something. If not, it was high 8s. Well, but at this point, he got super hot in June, which was crazy, right? Before he goes on the IL, we learn out he's been basically playing with, like, a stress reaction, which is frankly a fracture in his leg. And but he went really hot in June. So these guys can get hot at any time. That's what great players do. But that doesn't mean they will. So that's to your point of, let's see here. Yeah, you have 400 plate appearances left, but you've had 220. So, like, that's a lot.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's sort of the question. And I think that this is a big series coming up against the Washington Nationals. It's a 3-game set. Starting tonight, 3:30 or so San Diego time. This is a Nationals team that is better than you think they are if you're a casual baseball fan. And two of their best players are former Padres prospects. Let's talk about the strides that both James Wood and C.J. Abrams have made here with the Nationals under a manager who's about 30 years old.
Yep, they're a young team playing just like you would think a young manager would have them playing. They do a lot of things well. They play hard. They make mistakes. They can be beat bad. They've finally got to like 500 and now over 500. The pitching's not great, but they hit the heck out of the ball. And primarily James Wood, I think it's 15 homers. Correct me if I'm wrong. CJ Abrams, I believe it's 12 homers.
Yes.
And you know, they can get you. So, but you know what? They don't have Christopher Sanchez, Aaron Nola, and Jesus Luzardo. The Padres should have gotten Aaron Nola. You know, almost everyone else has recently. But he's still a good pitcher. And he pitches well at Petco Park. But, like, this is not that what they're going to face here. And so, like, and also given where they're at, four game losing streaks, good teams respond. And you and I don't ever come on this podcast and call for a sweep and rarely even say, oh, they should take two of three. But like, this is a time where if you're that team, you come in here and you get it right. I'm not saying the season's over if they don't, but, and I did do the math, by the way. Even if the what Nationals swept, the Padres would still be ahead of them in the standings. Now, why do I bring that up? Because the Padres are tied for the number four. It'd be by percentage points, as in like 1/100th of a percentage point or something like that. Why do I bring that up? Because the Padres are in the top wildcard spot tied with the Diamondbacks. There are five teams within a game and a half of them.
Wow.
So, like, wow. This is a race. However you want to look at it, if you want to say all the divisions are open too, then you have an 11 team race for six spots. If you want to say, you know, I figure the Dodgers are going to win it and the, you know, the Braves are going to win the East. Then you say, and then let's say the Brewers are going to win the Central, though I don't know, but let's say that, then it's a 8 team race for the three wild card spots. We haven't had that. It's been a lot more competitive since they went to the 6 playoff teams in 2025, 6 playoff teams in each league. But it has not been like this in June, where you have this many teams within a game and a half, or even really even close to that, you know, all fighting and believing that they can win.
Right. And I know this is probably a topic for another show, but the Diamondbacks are coming. And that's, I think, distressing if you're a Padre fan. Is Arizona has sort of caught up to the Padres at this point. And I think that they have a lot going for them at this point in the year with some good pitchers coming back. And so, you know, to me, that's, you know, that's the Diamondbacks are right behind them. And that could be a storyline as we go forward. Let's get into a little bit of the Nationals. Lucas Giolito, who was a top prospect for the Washington Nationals, returns to Nationals Park tonight. He will take on in the series opener. He'll take on Paxton Schultz. Paxton Schultz 0-2 with an ERA over 5. He will be an opener. Expect Andrew Alvarez to pitch in bulk here, but it's a righty followed by a lefty for the Nats. Kevin Giolito, you know, I was at his last start last Saturday. It really does know how to pitch. Obviously, a veteran guy. The velocity continues to be a concern. How worried are they, or is this just part of the ramp up to him being a back in sort of the low to mid 90s with his fastball?
This is, I don't know, concerning. If concerning is less than worrying, then it's concerning. When was the guy going to blow you away? I know that we focus on it and it's a huge deal. And he's going to be playing with fire if the velocity doesn't pick up. But like, he knows how to pitch. They knew what they were getting. They want him to keep him in games. The guy has really good changeup. And he's a survivor. Now, it's a concern because he'll get blown up at some point, right? And it'll happen. But like, they got him to be able to do what he's done. He might be a little fortunate to be 2-0, but he's pitched well enough. And so it's kind of everything you said. It's a ramp up. That's what they're believing, what he's believing. There really isn't too much precedent for how he prepared for this season and started in middle of May for, you know, I mean, a guy not injured, but like, you know, a free agent and just out there working on his own, and then gets a month to get ready and then he's in, but he's a veteran. And I'm pushing back a little bit on the velocity being a huge deal, because it's not like he, you know, was Jacob Mizrowski or even Jason Adam, you know, throwing 96. And now we're like, wait, what's happening here? So, yeah.
Right. No, that's a good point. Saturday, you've got Michael King, 4-3 with an ERA of 2.76, going up against Foster Griffin. Real quick, let's appreciate what Michael King's been able to do. I mean, he struggled a little bit against the A's last week, but you know what? He had a 2.08 ERA this year before his last start against Oakland. Really has been everything you could have asked of him heading into the season, starting with healthy. For a guy who battled two injuries last year, cost him most of the season, he's been everything you've hoped him to be.
For a guy who hasn't found his command, like, at all, like with his best pitches, primarily his sinker, but also the sweeper, the changeup, not always there for him. And to be able to now still have a sub three ERA, I mean, just absolutely fantastic. That's the mark of a really good pitcher. Now, what I do want to say is that if you are a really good pitcher, at some point, got to be going, you know, like 7-8, which he has done, by the way, done 7. But like, we need to see more of those if he's Michael King, the number one starter. So, and I think Michael King very well could have been, would have been their number one starter, even if Nick Pivetta were healthy. I mean, Mike King is a really good starter.
Yep. He goes up against Foster Griffin. And Kevin, this probably only interests me, but I love guys like this. He's 30 years old, a former first-round pick. He throws 7 different pitches, and he's left-handed. That could make for some fun watching here, Michael King versus Foster Griffin here on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love those kind of pitchers. It's one thing to be amazed by, again, Jacob Mizorowski. Right, it's like remarkable, right? Like, or even like Sanchez, that like, wow. But like, you know, if you're throwing 103 in the sixth inning, if you're throwing 98, you know, that it's like, okay, yeah, you've got 98 and it moves and you've got other stuff. Well, yeah, if you're not doing that and you're a successful pitcher in this league, man, that's nice. I like that.
Yeah, it's a good story. And then Sunday, you've got Griffin Canning coming off the first quality start of the season for him. Looked great, I thought. Struck out 5, walked 3, pitched into the 7th inning last weekend in a game that the Padres would, I believe, lose, right? And then 3-0. Then he goes up against Zach Littell. Zach Littell, a guy who's kind of been on the Padres' radar the last couple of years, one of those sort of veteran starting pitcher type guys. He has a 4-4 record with an ERA a little bit over 5. I mean, nothing on paper in the Washington Nationals starting pitching rotation scares you really even in the slightest. But this is not a Padres team that has been able to hit pretty much anybody here the last couple of weeks.
I know, it's why I've always had felt a little weird. It's absolutely notable. And I do think it explains something that the Padres have faced more of the best, the top tier pitching than any other team in a lot of ways, right? Guys with stuff, guys whose numbers are really good. They have faced an abundance of those pitchers. But I feel weird about it because they've also not done great against some other pitchers. This team does not. And that's why I'm understanding and have always understood the angst of the fan, even though it's funny that like their winning streaks haven't inspired as much elation as their losing skids have inspired gloom and doom. That's always kind of funny to me. But I absolutely get the angst regarding this team because there just isn't a lot of there so far.
Right. Nope, not so far. And again, I don't want to harp on this necessarily because this is supposed to be a relatively short show. To give you an idea of how well the Nationals are hitting and how poorly the Padres are hitting, Kevin, I'm going to share a couple of stats with you. Okay. On base percentage, James Wood has an OPS of 967. CJ Abrams has an OPS of 937. No Padre has an OPS higher than 817. And that is Gavin Sheets. Okay. Home runs. James Wood has 15. CJ Abrams has 12. No Padre has more than 9. And that is Gavin Sheets. RBIs. RBIs. And this blows me away, Kevin. CJ Abrams has 47 RBIs and it's May. James Wood has 37 RBIs and it's May. No Padre has more than 27 RBIs, and that's Manny Machado. CJ Abrams has 20 more RBIs than the Padres' best run producer this year, which is amazing to me. And then just for the heck of it, because I'm looking at these numbers in front of me, the Nationals have a guy named Nassim Nunez, who I've never heard of before in my life, and he has 22 stolen bases, and it's May. And the Padres have Fernando Tatis, who has 14 stolen bases, which is still pretty darn good for a guy who, again, is getting on base more and more. So,
yeah. Just so you know, though, that Maxin Nunez, he has 193 plate appearances without a home run. Does anyone make a big deal out of that? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yeah, they don't sell Maxin Nunez t-shirt jerseys probably everywhere in town like they do with Fernando.
He's not going to average whatever it was, $28 million or whatever over the course of a 14-year deal either.
Right. And this is a team, obviously, that, you know, that is still waiting on Josiah Gray to come off the IL. Trevor Williams, San Diego guy. Charlin Susanna, he was part of that trade for Juan Soto. He's also hurt. So, you know, there is some case for optimism with the Nationals. I think that they're at the point right now where they're probably just entertaining more than they are good. But they're dangerous. And for a Padres team that's been struggling, I think that this could be a really telling three-game series.
I heard this yesterday. I did not know this, but I'm reliable. I think it happened. A radio station here threw a parade. Now, I don't know if that was six people. I don't know what happened, but a radio station here in Washington threw a parade the other day because the Nationals were above 500 this late in a season for the first time since they won the World Series.
Oh, my God.
It just sounds like almost like a San Diego thing to do. I just thought that was very funny. I hate myself that I thought that was funny, but I thought that was funny.
I think it's so funny, Kevin, you bring this up. I look at this Nationals team and I go, well, they're not very good, but they've got some guys who are mashing and they've got some young players you can dream on. And you can say that about most Padres teams until about 6 years ago, right? Like, it reminds me so much of some of the optimism that was in San Diego during the years in which the Padres were merely average instead of terrible, right? But if the current Padres are a good team, good teams need to crush average and bad teams.
Amen to that. And this is a very dangerous team, as you've noted. Let me ask you this: as the lifelong Padres follower, what would have been your mood and the mood of the Padres fans in general if at any time those players that were so that you spoke of that were like these there were a couple shining stars, if there were a couple young shining stars of the caliber of James Wood and C.J. Abrams back in the early tens, the thousands, the 90s, what would have been the overriding feeling of fans about what was going to happen with those two players?
Yeah, they're just going to get traded for other prospects, right? Or they're going to get hurt.
Yep.
There's that sense of dread, right? And look at Mackenzie Gore. I mean, Mackenzie Gore, as highly thought of as any Padres prospect when that trade happened, I mean, Mackenzie Gore's in Texas, right? I think that's what I would worry about if I was a Nats fan, is that James Wood will be DHing for the Dodgers in a year or DHing for the Yankees in a year or something like that. So, I understand. You know, Nationals Park probably will not be full this weekend, even though the Nationals are entertaining, because I'm sure those fans are probably a little reluctant to get all in on the Nationals train here just simply because they've been so bad for so long.
Right. And they traded up. And whether this is fair or not, right or not, like, because it is different, but like, you know, we don't always see the forest for the trees or context. Some of us try to, others don't. But like, you know, they trade away Juan Soto, right? Like it just, from their perspective, Strasburg got hurt. Like, if you're a Nats fan, you're feeling a little, oh boy, they do have a World Series. So there's that, World Series trophy there. This is a really fascinating. I'm glad you brought up a lot of this stuff. This is fun.
Yep. I have some friends who are Nationals fans, and I can only imagine their closets filled with Max Scherzer and Trey Turner and Bryce Harper and Anthony Rendon jerseys, right? I mean, the Nationals have shipped away a lot of really good players over the last decade or so. And it's unfortunate because Steven Strasburg's a San Diego guy and an Aztec and all that. You know, they commit money to one guy and it's Steven Strasburg, and he gets hurt and basically never pitches for them again. As a franchise, they've been a little snake bit when it comes to who they decide to keep and who they decide to get rid of, you know?
Yeah, except for that whole Anthony Rendon thing, which was...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every podcast, and today is no different, technical problems or not. Buried in your story today about where the Padres are at the 1/3 point of the season, you had this tidbit, which is the Padres are almost certain to be at least checking in on Tarek Skubal around the trade deadline. How real is this?
I hope I didn't write it that way, because they have already checked in, and they should be players for him, and they are expected to be. Now, there's a reason. I'm glad that you brought up about how I buried it. It's 2 months away, guys, and the Padres check in on everybody. So I find it as a journalist to be somewhat irresponsible. Maybe I'm wrong because fans eat up every tidbit, but then I'm just feeding a bunch of hungry goldfish who eat until they burst. I just want to say that's true and it's interesting, but we are so far away from it being something you can say, oh my gosh, the Padres are going to get Skubal. Now, if you're a Padres fan, what you can have is some optimism that AJ Preller knows how to pull off deals. Right. So you can have that, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here, but absolutely. And then the other thing I've gotten feedback on, how will that help their offense, that or getting a reliever? Here's the deal. The best thing that can happen for the Padres, the best addition, would be for Manny Machado, Jackson Merrill, and Fernando Tatis Jr. to join their offense. That would be the best trade, pre-trade deadline addition for the Padres. And if that doesn't happen, they won't add Skubal. They won't add a left-handed reliever. Because what offense are you going to add? And I'm not saying they're not going to go out and get a left fielder or maybe a first baseman, and then the Sheets would move out or to left or move into first or whatever, but because they might need to get some offensive help. But they have the offensive help. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. You're right. And again, Skubal, I mean, to me, two big asterisks here. Number one, he is hurt at the moment. And number two, you have no idea what it would take, because Skubal almost certainly will not re-sign with the Detroit Tigers after this year. This is his walk year. He's represented by Scott Boras. He's going to get paid by somebody at the end of this year. What would it take to rent Tarek Skubal for what? 10 starts, 12 starts?
Yeah. I haven't done the math. Is it $10, $12 million? He's making 30 plus. So prospects.
Plus the prospects. And to me, that becomes all part of the calculus, right? I mean, yes, you can make a splash, but what's the cost? And can your team win a World Series with Tarek Skubal? I mean, that to me is the question, or at least make a World Series with Tarek Skubal. You can't if your stars aren't playing like stars. If you're not hitting.
That's what I'm saying, is that you're not going to get him if they're not. So that's why we're not talking about offense right now. They have the players. What offense do you want to talk about? Do you want to go get another third baseman? You can get a DH, you get a left fielder, a first baseman. I'm not saying they can't get offense, but they have the offense. And I realize they're not hitting, but if they're not hitting when they're the bulk of the offense, then what are you adding for anyway? So the thing you kind of need to be thinking about is pitching, and your things about Skubal are correct. You also have, I haven't heard this name since the offseason, but they were in on Framber Valdez and were willing to give up quite a bit for him. I'm not sure where he's at. He's had good and bad starts. Framber Valdez, the Astros he's with the Tigers too. There's somebody on the Astros I want to mention, but there's the former Astro, Valdez, who's on the Tigers, who are going to be sellers almost certainly. Is he an option? Freddie Peralta. There are starters on rental starters that are on teams that are going to be sellers almost certainly, besides Skubal. But it's the Padres are looking to do something at the trade deadline, some things that make them better. That's really all we need to know right now, is that is their mindset. But their offense has to get better for that to happen.
Yep. Padres Nationals 3-game series starting this afternoon, 3:30 San Diego time. Kevin, enjoy Washington, D.C., and we'll talk early next week. That'll do it for the Hot Lava podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.